Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ashland Incorporated third quarter earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance at any time, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call may be recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jason Thompson, Director of IR. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Sonia. Good morning, and welcome to Ashland's third quarter fiscal 2015 conference call and webcast. We released preliminary results for the quarter ended June 30, 2015, at approximately 5:00 P.M. Eastern Time yesterday, July 29th. This presentation should be viewed in conjunction with the release. Additionally, we posted slides and prepared remarks to our website under the investor relations section and have furnished each of these documents to the SEC in a Form 8-K. On the call today are Bill Wulfsohn, Ashland's Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Kevin Willis, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Luis Fernandez-Moreno, Senior Vice President of Ashland and President of the Chemicals Group, which includes Ashland Specialty Ingredients and Ashland Performance Materials, and Sam Mitchell, Senior Vice President of Ashland and President of Valvoline. As shown on slide two, our remarks include forward-looking statements, as such term is defined under U.S. securities law. We believe any such statements are based on reasonable assumptions but cannot assure that such expectations will be achieved. Please also note that we will be discussing adjusted results in this presentation. We believe this enhances understanding of our performance by more accurately reflecting our ongoing business. With that, I will now hand the presentation over to Bill for opening remarks.
Thank you, Jason, and good morning, everyone. During our last quarterly call, I identified four core priorities for Ashland. The first priority was to ensure we continued to deliver on our EBITDA margin targets. In this area, during the quarter, we made great progress as a company, and most specifically within ASI and Valvoline. By focusing our people, production capacity, and capital allocation on highly differentiated areas of our portfolio, the team improved gross profit by 310 basis points year-over-year. In addition, the businesses and corporate groups have taken out substantial costs, reducing SG&A by 9% year-over-year. As a result, our adjusted EBITDA margin climbed 260 basis points versus the year-ago period to 21.2%. Our second core priority was to take further actions to reduce overall volatility. On this front, while we made progress, we still have some more work to do. We made great progress in reducing near-term cash requirements associated with key portions of our legacy liabilities. As you know, earlier this year, we established an asbestos trust. In addition, during the quarter, we made a $500 million voluntary contribution to our U.S. qualified pension plans. This action took the funded status as of the end of the quarter to near 90%, and as a result, we expect to have no required contributions for the next several years. At the same time, from an operational perspective, we continued to experience earnings volatility driven by changes in the North American energy market, the impact of foreign exchange or FX, and the cyclical impact of our I&S business. While it takes several quarters, clearly, we will focus on limiting the impact of these items in the future. The third core priority was to sustain our disciplined capital allocation strategy. To that end, since April, we made capital investments to enhance ASI's leading market position in the personal care and coatings end markets. More specifically, we brought online the first of a two-stage capacity expansion project at our Nanjing, China site. We also announced that we will be expanding capacity at our Hopewell facility in Virginia to support increased customer. Finally, we announced the acquisition of AkzoNobel's Zeta Fraction technology, which we believe will strengthen ASI's position in the personal care marketplace and also expand our offerings of sustainable, natural-based specialty ingredients. Note that as we invested in areas where we have innovation-driven, highly profitable market-leading positions, we also decided to exit and monetize two non-strategic product line assets. More specifically, ASI's industrial biocides and Valvoline's car care product businesses. Their divestitures not only generated cash, but were also EBITDA margin accretive. As a result of these combined actions, we have been able to reposition our portfolio while focusing our operating cash flow on returning cash to shareholders. Accordingly, during the quarter, we increased our dividend by nearly 15% and completed the $1.35 billion share purchase authorization announced in February of 2014. Under this authorization, the company bought back approximately 11.8 million shares. And this was key in driving Ashland's 17% increase in earnings per share in the third quarter. Finally, in late April, we announced a new $1 billion share repurchase authorization that is good through December 31st, 2017. This authorization reflects the board's continued confidence in Ashland's strategic direction, as well as our ability to generate cash, and management view that our stock is undervalued and thus an outstanding use of capital. Our fourth and final core priority referenced in our last earnings call was to develop a comprehensive five-year strategic plan. We've made great progress in this area, and I will share some insights from our efforts with you later in the call. But first, I want to turn the call over to the team so they can provide you some insights on our current business performance and outlook. Kevin?
Thanks, Bill, and good morning. Yesterday, we reported GAAP earnings of $1.68 per share from continuing operations. When adjusted for key items, earnings per share were $1.91, a 17% increase from prior year. This marks the fifth consecutive quarter of year-over-year growth in adjusted earnings per share. Given some of the challenges we faced this year from foreign exchange and energy markets, that's a pretty good performance. Currency remained a stiff headwind in the quarter, reducing EBITDA by $17 million. Additionally, the prior year quarter included $12 million of income from divested operations and exited product lines. Excluding these, the underlying performance of the business was strong. There were three primary drivers behind this. First, each of our three business units is delivering strong results in the higher value-added areas of their businesses. Second, our teams are maintaining a disciplined approach to pricing and margin management. And third, we're keeping a sharp eye on costs, both in manufacturing and SG&A, in order to sustain the good work done over the past year. Together, this led to a 260 basis point improvement in adjusted EBITDA margin when compared to a year ago. That's a solid performance, particularly when you consider that currency translation and divestitures, including the effects from exited product lines and ASI, represented approximately $170 million of headwind to sales versus prior year. We continue to see good volume and revenue growth in the higher value-added area businesses, and we expect that to remain as we move into the end of the fiscal year. I won't elaborate, as Bill just spoke about it, but I did want to highlight that our February 2014 $1.35 billion share repurchase authorization was recently completed, and we have received all of the remaining shares related to the two ASR programs we were running. Returning cash to shareholders has been an important part of our capital allocation strategy, and we expect that to be the case going forward. We also just completed a debt refinancing, extending our maturities and lowering our weighted average cost of debt. As part of this debt package, we contributed $500 million of the proceeds into the U.S. qualified pension plans and are in the process of conducting a lump sum offering to terminated vested participants in these plans, which should be completed by the end of Q4. This will improve our funded status, reduce administrative costs, and we expect will result in no required cash contributions to the U.S. plans for the next several years. With that, I will now hand the presentation over to Luis to provide more color on ASI's results for the quarter.
Thanks, Kevin. Overall, ASI had a good quarter. Despite facing persistent headwinds from currency and energy, our teams continue to execute well against our strategy of focusing on the higher margin segments of the market, where we create significant value for our customers. A good example of this is consumer specialties, where sales of our personal care and pharmaceutical product lines again posted good growth. We have introduced a number of new products in these markets over the past several quarters, and this has been a strong contributor to our margin improvement. Across our portfolio of products and technologies sold in the personal care market, we are leveraging our expertise in ingredient technology, applications development, and consumer science to create enterprise-level solutions for our customers. The announced acquisition of the Seta Fraction technology from Axo will further enhance our innovation capabilities in biofunctionals for our consumer specialty segments. Although our teams drove another quarter of good performance, we continue to face some significant headwinds. The combined effect of currency, our exit from non-core product lines, and weakness in energy markets reduced sales by a combined $72 million in the quarter. In addition, the slowdown in packaging adhesives and price concession in some segments impacted by lower materials like construction and nutrition offset business growth in higher value-add areas of the business. Gross margins were strong for the quarter, increasing 160 basis points from the prior year. Overall, market and product mix remained healthy, and our teams continue to excel in managing both manufacturing costs. Looking to the fourth quarter, we expect that these headwinds from currency and energy to remain. However, we also expect to continue seeing growth, strong results from the higher margin, higher value-add areas of our business. Consistent with normal seasonality, we expect revenues to be 3 to 5% below the third quarter and EBITDA margin to decline somewhat to around 23 to 23.5%. Longer term, we will continue to compensate for currency and energy headwinds through disciplined cost execution and growth in core segments. One key area for us is our new product pipeline that is leading to some exciting opportunities, while we also have additional capacity coming to the market to support our customers' growth. And these additions are primarily focused in the high-margin product lines. Although we will continue to see difficult comparisons in the next two quarters due to FX and energy, we should see some favorable comparisons after we begin to lap quarters affected by those headwinds. To summarize, I'm pleased with where we are as an organization. In previous quarters, I've shared with you a four-step strategy to achieve our vision. We've implemented much of those changes and are seeing the benefits, such as in our innovation pipeline and new product developments, such as in our improved supply chain, and also in bringing our teams into a unified shared culture. We still have much to do, but we're in a good path to achieving our established goals. Let's turn to the next slide, and I'll walk through the third quarter results for Performance Materials. Despite slightly lower volumes versus prior year, composites margins remained strong in the period. We saw good growth in Europe for the second consecutive quarter, although this was offset by softness in North America and continued weakness in Latin America. Softness in North America is primarily related to the spillover from the energy market. As I mentioned last quarter, we have been adjusting prices to reflect lower input costs in certain regions, and once again, that was the case in the third quarter. However, we're seeing inputs rise in certain areas of the world, particularly Europe. Our teams are doing a good job of managing margins in a fairly volatile raw material environment. Currency has been a headwind for APM too, reducing sales by about 7%. As we indicated in an investor call in late April, both of our IMS plants faced shutdowns in the third quarter. One was a plant turnaround, and the other was an unplanned outage. We estimate the combined cost of these shutdowns at approximately $14 million, which is $6 million better than expectations. Both plants have returned to normal operations as our teams did a great job of getting the plants up and running in a very efficient manner. Compared with prior year, BDO prices remained a headwind. However, prices appear to be stabilizing in a narrower range. We expect pricing to remain around these levels for the foreseeable future. Looking to the fourth quarter, underlying performance of composites should remain strong. However, we believe the soft energy market in North America will continue to result in a slightly slower growth rate. We're taking actions to offset rising raw material costs in certain areas of the world, but we do expect negative lag to impact margins in the fourth quarter. INH margins should return to around the same level reported prior to the shutdowns. In total, we expect sales between $255 and $265 million, an EBITDA margin of 8 to 8.5% for the fourth quarter. Over the longer term, we continue to believe that the composites market will remain healthy. We are well positioned for growth and will invest in new product and application development to drive both sales and earnings expansion. We also expect the volatile raw material environment to remain. Our focus will remain on overall margin management, ensuring we pass through raw material increases quickly while also working to reduce costs. I will now hand it over to Sam for a summary of Valvoline's third quarter.
Thanks, Luis. Valvoline posted another quarter of record earnings with improved profitability across each of our channels as our teams continue to execute at a high level. Within DIY, strong promotions during the quarter led a 4% volume increase. Although we do expect another good performance in the DIY channel in the fourth quarter, we also expect the results to normalize from a very strong third quarter. The Valvoline and Oil Change team had another exceptional quarter with each of the key metrics improving from prior year. Oil changes per day were up 7%, average ticket increased 2%, and same-store sales for company-owned sites rose 9%. Our franchise system also delivered similarly strong results, evidence of consistent execution across our customer service model and marketing programs. In the international channel, volumes grew 8% as growth has normalized following the customer destocking that we had experienced during the first and second quarters. This is a bit higher than we would normally expect and partially reflects these destocking dynamics. At the same time, our international team is doing a good job of developing key channels and marketing strategies, which are leading to higher growth. Premium product sales remained strong across Valvoline and accounted for nearly 41% of total branded lubricant sales. This strong operational performance, coupled with good margins, led to EBITDA growth of 17% from prior year. Looking to the fourth quarter, we expect continued strong results, strong performance across all channels. However, typical seasonal patterns should result in a sequential decline in both sales and profitability. We also expect the DIY and international channels to normalize from an exceptionally strong third quarter. As a result, we expect sales to be in the range of $475 to $485 million and EBITDA margin to contract somewhat to around 19 to 20%. Our longer-term outlook remains unchanged. We expect to continue driving volume growth within Valvoline Instant Oil Change and our international and installer channels. Within DIY, we'll work on market segmentation and digital marketing efforts to drive consumer preference and enhance our brand strength. And more broadly, we'll look to invest in our marketing capabilities, developing creative and more efficient ways to reach consumers. I'll now hand the presentation over to Bill for his closing remarks.
Thank you, Sam, and congratulations to you and your team on delivering another great quarter. To summarize, when I step back and look at our Q3, the team did a great job of improving our EBITDA margins. They worked hard to sustain disciplined cost control and to drive margin improvement with a laser focus on our highly differentiated products and markets. That said, neither I nor the team is satisfied with our top-line performance in the quarter. While I recognize that our sales were negatively impacted by FX, energy, and the strategic portfolio decisions we made to improve our margin and mix, I know that the chemicals and Valvoline business units are two outstanding business platforms with attractive growth prospects and experienced leadership teams. Thus, our challenge going forward is to sustain our margin improvement while increasing our focus on driving top-line growth. Not surprisingly, this was a major focus of our recent strategic planning process. We look forward to sharing our plans with you during our November 11th Investor Day. And while time is limited during today's call and we want to leave time for your questions, I want to share a few high-level details with you today. As we developed our plans, we looked at our business through two core lenses, first from an operational and second from a capital allocation perspective. Using the operational lens, we see significant avenues to accelerate profitable growth in both Valvoline and the highly differentiated portions of the Chemicals Group. In chemicals, we have established a mission to create the world's leading specialty chemical company focused on delivering unique technologies that enable our customers to formulate great consumer and industrial products. We intend to leverage our operational strengths and technology leadership positions by allocating people and capital to grow in focused applications and markets. More specifically, we want to focus our broad set of technologies to provide full solutions to attractive and growing markets like the pharma, personal care, coatings, as well as highly specialized areas of the industrial market where our products provide solutions to customers that place value on innovation and performance. To win, we will capitalize on our core capability in terms of, first, innovation, and by innovation, I mean using our know-how to develop innovative proprietary solutions for customers who are seeking performance differentiation. Second, through commercial excellence, and by commercial excellence, I mean employing a customer-intimate model in partnership with our customers so as to understand their needs, provide solutions, and get paid for the value we create. And third, in terms of world-class operations. By world-class operations, I mean, of course, safety and responsible operations. That should go without saying. But this also means having industry-leading quality systems and capabilities combined with outstanding customer service while driving continuous cost improvement to ensure we have a competitive cost structure. In Valvoline, we have an outstanding premium consumer-branded engine and automotive maintenance business. Our vow is to bring hands-on expertise for the benefit of our customers every day, moving the business forward with speed and excellence. We intend to drive growth by expanding our Valvoline Instant Oil Change store network, increasing our focus internationally, investing to enhance our digital marketing technologies to enhance our values to both consumers, our installers, and through distributors, and finally, across all of our channels, expanding the penetration of our synthetic lubricants technology platform. From a corporate metrics viewpoint, we will continue to drive to meet the previously established EBITDA margin targets while increasing our focus on growth in a manner that drives strong, less volatile, and more sustainable cash generation with investments that lead to higher levels of return on invested capital. Now switching to the capital allocation lens, we do not believe we will need high levels of capital to sustain our growth plans. We will target stay-in-business capital at roughly 70% to 80% of depreciation and amortization. And even when we factor in growth investments over the planning period, total capital is expected to be around our current depreciation and amortization levels. Looking forward, a capital allocation strategy related to business development focuses on, one, we believe we have completed the majority of our product line divestitures from within ASI and Valvoline. And on the other side of the coin, we believe that while there are many attractive acquisition targets which fit our core criteria, that multiples are high in the market today. The criteria we've used are focusing on areas that are close and complementary to our core capabilities in highly attractive specialty subsegments with high risk-weighted return on capital based upon cost-based synergies, with sales synergies being upside to the base case. We've passed on several potential opportunities due to high multiples, and we will continue to use discipline to avoid overpaying. Thus, given our strong balance sheet and projected cash flow, limited organic capital requirements, and high acquisition multiples in the marketplace, we continue to see returning cash to shareholders as a primary capital allocation focus. While we're on the subject of capital allocation, I know many of you have questions and ideas regarding the future direction of our portfolio of businesses. Let me first say that during our strategic planning process, our first priority has been to go deep into the core strengths and organic opportunities within the businesses. At the same time, we will continue to look at all aspects of our portfolio to to consider how each of our business and product line fit with Ashland's long-term strategy. The company and the board have shown a willingness to be very active on this front, and while I'm still early in my tenure, I am confident that going forward, we will continue to be proactive and make important and tough decisions. Our time today is limited, and accordingly, please join us on November 11th so that in our Investor Day, you can learn more as to why we are so excited about our business future and the investment opportunity Ashland represents. With that, I will turn the call over to the operator to take your questions. Thank you.
Yes, Sonia, just before we get started, I just want to remind everybody for Q&A, just to limit it to one question and one follow-up. Feel free to open it up, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star, then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from John McNutley of Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my question. A couple questions. So on the Valvoline front, certainly the numbers looked like they were almost off the charts. I mean, everything seems to be humming really well. At the same time, when I look at your guidance, despite it being kind of a relatively seasonally strong quarter, it looks like you're guiding to a pretty big drop off from 3Q, but even to a level that's kind of in line with the first quarter and below second quarter. So I guess, can you walk us through kind of what's driving that conservatism? Because it does seem, just given the growth rates that you're seeing, et cetera, that may be maybe a little bit on the low side.
Yeah, John, this is Sam Mitchell, and primarily the guidance has to do with some shifts that we see in the business as we look into the fourth quarter. The DIY business tends to be the more seasonal part of the business, and so we'll see a bit lower volumes in DIY based on our forecast and promotional schedule with some of our major retailers. So that's probably your biggest factor. The other parts of the business are still looking to be quite strong. Valvoline is an oil change. We expect those positive trends to continue into the fourth quarter and also expect international to continue to perform, though not at the same level that they did during the third quarter. You have finally, you have a little bit of a pricing effect, too. We've had a positive price lag effect on our margins, both in Q2 and Q3. Some of those price adjustments that were passed through to customers in Q3, will have impact on the fourth quarter margin. So we'll see our gross profit margin drop off a bit, and then we'll also see an impact from lower DIY volumes.
Okay, great. And then maybe just shifting over to ASI, maybe a question or two kind of linked. I guess one, it looks like you've done a lot of capital investment, putting in some decent expansions. Are we at the end of that? It sounded like in maybe Bill's comments toward the end there, maybe we are. But I guess can you kind of quantify how much you've been spending, and then how that should kind of normalize as we look to 2016, and then also looking to 2016, if energy's bottomed here, are we at a point where we'll actually start to see real core growth again in the business? Because it's been a little bit disappointing with FX and energy working against you. So maybe you can walk us through that a little bit. That'd be helpful.
Yeah, hi John, how are you? This is Luis. On your first question and regarding the capital allocation, we've announced a variety of expansions, the first of which was the Nanjing plant expansion, which came on board on Q1. All of these expansions would happen between now and the next, actually, 3 years. So they are part of our capital forecast that Bill referred to in terms of our overall expenditure. But we're definitely not done, and we need some of those expansions coming along in 2016, 2017, and 2018. So, as I said, they are part of our current plan that Bill referred to, but they are still coming along through the pipeline. And as you know, it takes time to build some of these manufacturing facilities. On your second question around energy, yes, this has been a pretty disappointing situation for us and quarter. Since we play mostly on the drilling portion of the market, which again it's drilling and stimulation and cementing, we were definitely disappointed with the results in the quarter. Fundamentally, our energy business serves complex applications. That means where it's difficult to get to the product and high temperatures, high pressures, and that's the area of the market that has been impacted the most. And I would say I probably underestimated the degree of reduction. I don't think the energy market is going to get much worse than what it is today. I mean, we've seen already a significant reduction. But to be honest, I don't think that there is a significant upside in the next at least 6 months to a year. So what we are doing is we're taking significant actions in reducing our costs when it comes to the energy market. We mothballed one of our plants that services that market. We'll be ready to start again as soon as the market comes back. And we're taking actions on our cost control in other areas. At the same time, we're speeding up our innovation and growth in the high-value markets, which are in the consumer area, pharmaceutical, and coatings. So those are the actions we're taking to compensate versus the downside that we're seeing on energy.
Great. Thanks very much for the caller.
Our next question comes from Brian McGuire of Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open.
Hey, Bill, appreciate the comments around uses of cash going forward and would agree with you. The stock looks like a great value at these levels. Just wondering why that led you to not repurchase any shares during the quarter. I know you still have the ASR going on, but would have thought maybe you'd do something with the new repurchase authorization. Just wondering if there's anything that would have prevented you from doing any buybacks in the quarter, and how should we think about the cadence and pace of the new buyback?
Sure, and I'll, Brian, thank you, first of all, for the question and the comments. I'll provide a brief insight and then pass it over to Kevin to give a little more detail. But we were in essence, over the last quarter, limited by the fact that we had two active ASR programs in place, and so we couldn't do anything further. We're clearly now moving beyond that, and so this is the time where we will be mapping out our strategy as to how to most effectively utilize the current authorization.
Just as a reminder, those two ASRs effectively terminated at the very end of the quarter. The shares were delivered first business day or two of July. So effectively, we were out of the market other than those ASRs during the June quarter. As we've stated, it would be our objective to primarily use cash generated by operations to fund the share repurchase over the course of time. We do believe that our shares represent a really good value, as Bill outlined from a capital allocation perspective. Clearly, multiples are very high. We had another example of that this week, and so we see our shares as a good value and would intend to execute on that over the course of time. As I think most people are aware, while we do have a sizable amount of cash on the balance sheet, the vast majority of that is located outside the U.S. And over the course of time, we would expect to be able to repatriate sums of cash in a tax efficient way. But as that occurs, we'd certainly look at our options at that point. But, to be clear, number one, we do see our shares as a good value. Number two, we plan to use cash flow from operations to repurchase shares. And, number three, as we would normally do, we'll provide you an update on our activity at the next earnings call.
Okay, great. And just as a follow-up, I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on the recent the debt and pension moves that you've made. Just maybe philosophically, how do you think about the trade-off and what you've accomplished there, and then maybe financially, how should we expect that to impact, net income, interest expense, pension expense, and cash flow going forward? Thanks.
Okay. First and foremost, the project in terms of depositing or funding $500 million voluntarily into the pension trust was very NPV positive for a variety of reasons. The two primary being the administrative costs associated with maintaining the pension trust and the number of participants that we have in the trust. And second, and also not at all inconsequential, are periodic changes to the mortality table that tend to have a relatively significant impact from a value perspective on the liability as people continue to live longer, which is which is a great thing for humanity, but does in fact cause the pension liability to increase. And so, you know, first and foremost for us, it was the analysis around whether or not it was an NPV positive thing to do, and it was, in our view, very NPV positive. And the other aspect of the analysis was around what I would call regret factor. I mean, everyone expects interest rates to rise over the course of time. We believe that will happen as well. The Fed's obviously talking a little bit about that, at least at the short end of the curve. As we thought about this, looking at putting $500 million in, rates would still have to climb pretty significantly before we would find ourselves in a funded status position that would cause us to say, oh, we wish we hadn't done that or hadn't done as much or whatever. Looking at it from kind of near-term impact on the business, total debt's obviously higher, at least if you think about it just from an as-reported balance sheet perspective, we really traded $500 million of pension debt for $500 million of bank debt. That's the way we view it economically. Between that and the retiring of the $600 million of 3% notes, actual cash interest increases by $4 million per year pre-tax on a net basis. So pretty inconsequential in the grand scheme of things. Obviously, weighted average cost of debt goes down. And You look at the rest of the financial picture. We accelerated a tax asset. U.S. statutory rate plus state rate for us is about 39%. So, contributing that $500 million represents the ultimate acceleration of nearly $200 million of tax assets that we'll be able to use over the near term, which is also a positive thing. Other part of the equation is ongoing contributions. This year, we'll put between $80 and $90 million into the U.S. qualified plan. With this $500 million voluntary contribution, that will, or at least should, cause us to not have to make contributions to the U.S. qualified plan for at least the next 4 or so years. Obviously, that depends on how the discount rate moves. It depends on how the assets perform. But, you know, call it all things being equal, free cash flow effectively would go up by that $80 to $90 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years at least. Did I answer all your questions in that?
Yeah, very thorough answer. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Bicklitter of Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
And good morning. Bill and Luis, looking at ASI for next year, I know it's early, but in terms of margins, can they expand next year given some of the uniqueness this year? And if so, what are the drivers for margin expansion next year in ASI?
Yeah, hi, David. Thanks for your question. And obviously, it's early in our planning process, but we're taking actions that continually drive margin improvement towards our stated targets. So I do expect that as we continue moving forward, that we're going to continue to improve margins as we have a healthier mix of products. We do see growth, higher growth in our higher margin areas of the business. So we do expect to see continuous improvement versus the previous year. Obviously, the one thing that I have to factor in is FX. And as long as FX remains where we are, we definitely should see those margins to improve. And having said that, as I said, we're taking actions to do self-help in order to improve our margins. Some of the things that will impact there are the expansions that we're bringing in online. That would, again, provide growth that we have not been able to capture because we just don't have the capacity. And as an example, the capacity that we just started in Nanjing, we sold out that in Q2. So every time we're bringing these capacity expansions in higher margin products, we're being able to go out and sell them out. So overall, continue the trend towards our stated target. And I hope to see more impact from energy because we're pretty much to a minimum now. And the actions that we're taking should get us to that continued margin improvement.
Very good. And just on performance, Bill, in your brief time here at Ashland versus before you got here, has your view of performance improved or declined in terms of the quality and long-term prospects for this business?
Dave, thanks for the question, and I would say that my confidence in terms of the ability to drive profitable growth has improved coming on board as I've gotten to know better, first of all, the opportunities that exist within the chemicals platform and not surprisingly, most specifically within ASI, driving the technology component, really working in close partnership with our customers to make sure we provide meaningful solutions. I spent a lot of time with customers over the last few months, and they're hungry for that innovation, and they want to work with us. And not surprisingly, really seeing the potential of Valvoline to not just deliver as they're delivering this year, but to become a greater growth engine. When you look at it, and Sam has shared in the past, he certainly will in November, the business has had a great track record of moving forward, and with that, it would we expect that it will continue based upon the plans that are in place. We have more opportunities to expand internationally. We have more opportunities to expand the store count, and we have more opportunities to expand our share position as the team has done over time. So all in all, I feel, if you will, better now that I understand the businesses in a more meaningful way, and I've had the chance to spend time not just with the teams but with the customers, that we have some really great opportunities for growth as well as profitable growth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Laurence Alexander of Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Good morning. This is Dan Rizzo in for Laurence. Given the growth you're seeing from your different businesses, are you guys done with portfolio pruning, or is there other things you think you probably can divest or potentially sell?
So first, this is Bill. Let me, you know, kind of reiterate what I've shared before in terms of I think the company and the businesses have been very active in terms of looking at the portfolio, pruning the product lines that have less of a strategic fit. I think a majority of that activity has been within the ASI and Valvoline business. And as we've looked at it, we're focusing more energy on growing the real jewels in the portfolio rather than completing further divestitures, if you will. So I won't close the door around that. And again, I'm speaking of product lines within the businesses themselves, but we feel like it's time to focus more on growth as a way to improve our margins and less on divesting what might be less attractive subcomponents of the business. From an overall portfolio standpoint, again, I want to just emphasize that I think we're very active in looking at our portfolio and what fits with our strategic vision, and we'll continue to be active. Our goal is fundamentally to create shareholder value, to get our stock price up. That's really what's driving our actions and our analyses, what will create that greatest value. So as time goes on, just as it has in the past, I think we'll continue to look aggressively at the portfolio.
Okay, thank you for that. And then in the press release, I think you said obviously there's weakness in energy, but I think you mentioned the construction market for industrial specialties also being weak. I was just wondering if you could just elaborate on that and where you're seeing it and what you're seeing, just a little color.
Yeah, sure. This is Luis again. Actually, yeah, the market, the construction market has been weak throughout the year. Having said that, actually for us, Q3 was better than we expected. We're starting to see a rebound of it, especially in Europe. So although it's coming off from a low base, we're starting to see some improvements. And again, part of the reason that Europe is important for us, a significant portion of our construction market is in Europe. So that's important when you look at the comparisons. So in that regard, again, coming from a lower base, but we're starting to see definitely improvements in that market.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Sison of KeyBank. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys. I thought you had a nice quarter. Bill, you know, clearly the market today isn't terribly agreeing with your view that stock's undervalued. So maybe you could help out a little bit and think about maybe what we're missing or what the market is missing to some degree. What metrics do you see in the two businesses that you have that you think is undervalued?
Well, to begin with, I think that
the company and the respective business units have done a great job of providing greater clarity as to their ability to execute on actions to drive EBITDA margin improvement. And so obviously as the businesses have continued to perform on that front, I think there's a better appreciation for the specialty nature of the business that we're in. I think also at the same time, we importantly need to clarify that while we are truly focused on being the leading specialty chemical company, we do have a real jewel in the Valvoline platform, and that should be given, if you will, fair value within our overall mix. I do think that we need to have a stronger growth quotient. It's been great to divest and cut costs to enable focus and improve margins, but I think everybody would like to see top-line growth as well, and I think when we can show that, I think that would help with the cause. I think you have expressed and we're committed to not only reducing the impact of, if you will, from a cash flow legacy liabilities, where I think you've heard we've taken a lot of actions, but really in some of the areas where we have more cyclicality, trying to drive that portion of the business to be less meaningful versus the overall results so that we can be more predictable, if you will, so the strong cash generation and less volatile. And then finally, I think we need to just continue to show that we do have disciplined applications or our capital allocation, but we at the same time can invest in growth while still sending cash back to the shareholders and make smart investments that give high returns on invested capital. And so once we demonstrate or communicate that further, then I'd like to think our company will be valued as it should. Obviously, when we're together in November, we'll try to touch on each one of these points and why we feel good about them going forward. But those are my rough thoughts on the subject, so I hope that was helpful.
Great, thank you. And then, Sam, when you think about I think you're looking at roughly, you know, anywhere around 300 basis point decline in Valvoline margins sequentially into the fourth quarter. Can you help us maybe bucket, you know, how much is from the seasonality and volume, how much is from, you know, a little bit less pricing and margin, and maybe any other factors? And you've been somewhat, and if there's upside potential, where in those buckets do you think there could be some upside? Thanks.
Okay. As I shared before, I think, you know, there's really two primary buckets, and one is the mix and the lower volume that we'll see in DIY versus the third quarter, and the second is the pricing impact. So they're both pretty meaningful buckets, and again, it's just the price pass-through that took place in the third quarter. We'll see the full effect of that in the fourth quarter.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Roberts of UBS. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Now that the fragrance companies have discovered the cosmetic actives area, do you think that's probably off limits, you know, indefinitely in terms of an acquisition area for you?
This is Luis. Yeah. No, I don't think so. I mean, at the same time that some of them were looking at that space, we were able to acquire new technology, important technology for us to grow in that space. And one of the things that we have is we have probably a much better channel to market. I mean, we are very much present with these consumer products companies, personal care companies, in a lot of places when it comes to their formulations. And we put together the package to offer a full solution that includes biofunctionals, includes other additives that enhance the products that our customers sell. So to be honest, I in many ways I welcome their coming to the business, but I personally think that we're in a much better position to continue to grow our biofunctional business, both based on our innovation capabilities, our intimacy with the customers, and overall our commercial channels that we have there.
Do you think you'll need a strategic alliance with a fragrance company to have that as part of your offering?
Well, that That's not something that, I'm considering at this time, and it's very, very early in the game, right? They first need to close on those acquisitions and see how they go. But, again, they're definitely different parts of the equation when it comes to the formulation in terms from the fragrance to the actual functionality of the products.
And then as a follow-up, how strategic is it to have capital tied up in back integration into BDO, or could you be less integrated or non-integrated and source from the market?
Sure. So I think, as has been articulated in the past, having producer economics and security of supply, high-quality material, is really very important to the ASI business. That being said, there are multiple ways to make sure that we have that supply while meeting our other objectives of limiting the volatility that can come from some of the commodity dynamic in the merchant market. There are a variety of avenues, including establishing long-term contracts, looking at possible ways of venturing in terms of supply and so forth. So that's something that, again, I think we can talk to a little bit more in November, but we clearly want to ensure we have that supply capability, but at the same time find a way to minimize that volatility. That's those dual objectives relate, if you will, our perspective on the BDO market.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Harrison of Global Hunter Securities. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Just kind of a follow-up question on BDO. Can you talk about the impact of a potential China slowing on the BDO business? Does that push the trough out a little bit farther and maybe even deeper? You mentioned that you're seeing pricing stabilize there. Could it get worse if China gets worse?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, clearly part of the reason why we have a lot more BDO in the market today has been because overall the Chinese market has slowed down somewhat versus the predictions were for the uses of that material. And I do think that China slowing down will probably put more pressure in terms of the business. Having said that, part of the reason why the business is stabilizing is because many of those plants that were operating in China actually started to shut down. In other words, there are people that are already gotten below their variable cost, which causes them to shut down their operations, even because it's better for them. Our overall cost position in that space is very good. It's really a leading position. So even as demand may drop further, one of the things that we're seeing is, again, that people are starting to get to that point where it's better for them to mothball shut down the plants rather than selling. So although it's, again, we'll need to see how that goes, I have a certain level of confidence that we're very close to the bottom from a pricing perspective, as, again, I start to see people shutting down plants. And obviously a lot of expansions that have been announced, all of them have been delayed, or a lot of them have been delayed. So that's the basis for our comment that we think that we're very close to the bottom.
And then maybe, Luis, you can continue on this one. You had a big coatings customer talking on their call about the impact of weather, and specifically on a lot of rain in many regions in the U.S. during April, May, June, even into July. Did you see any weakness in your U.S. coatings business related to that? And is it possible that maybe we see that on a lag as your customers are working down inventories during the September quarter?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. I mean, as you know, the coatings industry makes a lot of paint in the Q1 calendar to be ready for the paint season in the U.S., and then if things don't go well, people normally slow down their production in the Q2 calendar. And there's two things to that answer, two aspects of that answer. Did we see certain slowness or not as much seasonality in the market as we normally see? I would say yes, we saw that a little bit. However, because we have not been able to supply all of the needs of our customers, we actually saw growth. So our situation is slightly different. I mean, did we see some of the slowdown? Yes. Did that impact us? No. And on the contrary, as I said before, we were able to start selling much more of our HEC because we now have the capacity available in the marketplace. So I guess the answer is yes, we saw it, but it didn't impact us. On the contrary, we saw growth in that market.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jim Sheen of SunTrust. Your line is now open.
Thanks a lot. Luis, could you address the energy and industrial parts of ASI that are receiving some cyclical exposure now? You've outlined some of the actions you're taking to counter the downdraft, but just addressing specifically the energy and industrial portions, what actions can you continue to take here to sort of lift margins or counter the downdraft there?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, the first action we took is we have two plants where we make products for this market. We mothballed one of them, and that will bring lower cost. Granted, we're looking at areas in our SG&A to further reduce our exposure. That is on the one side of the equation, and it's really mostly around energy. I think we saw a little bit of a slowdown in adhesives, but I think that's mostly temporary. I don't think that's a long-term trend. The rest of the industrial markets are either they are growing or we're able to grow above market because of our capacity expansions. So really the focus for us is on growing the high-margin portions of our business, both on the industrial side, coatings. There's a couple of other areas in specialties that we're growing. As I mentioned, construction is getting better. But also in our consumer side, where we're just seeing both the growth in the industry and we continue to capture share through innovation. Those would be the key items. So if I were to summarize it, it's two items. Growth more than market in the markets that are growing, and make sure that we're cost conscious in those markets that we're seeing headwinds.
And I would just add to what Luis has said by if you think about it, some of the materials that go into those markets start with the same underlying assets as other portions of our business, and the team has been very active in essentially redeploying that capacity into other segments of the marketplace. That's taking hold, which is certainly helping, and with that, that helps on the volume side, but it also helps on the margin side as well.
Terrific. And also on Valvoline, I think your tone has shifted a little bit, referring to it as a jewel that you want to invest in the growth of. And so given that, maybe the value of Valvoline is not fully being recognized within the portfolio and in your stock price, do you see Ashland as being the best owner of this asset long term? Are you viewing this as a core part of Ashland now?
Well, I'm going to apologize just a little bit repetitive here from just expressing the first viewpoint is back to what are the requirements that are associated to allow the business to meet its full potential. And then I think after that, it's important for us to look at the role of the corporation, the operational synergies that come from us working together. We work on some common platforms. We use some common resources, cash flows, and our structure globally can be complementary. And we have to weigh that against the issues associated with the capital markets and whether the businesses, through a more focused lens or just through the broad light of day, can ultimately create more value. And while you asked that question about Valvoline, I would say that my answer is meant to be broad about more or less everything that we do. And so I think we're very open to looking at what is the right answer for the businesses, the right answer for the shareholders. And the board has been consistent in making those types of decisions. And as I said earlier, I don't see that changing. So it's an important thought, and it's not lost on us.
Thank you.
All right, Sonia, we'll take one more question here.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dmitry Silversteyn of Longbow Research. Your line is now open.
Guys, and thank you for making room for my question. I actually have only a couple left over, and some of these are maybe revisiting or trying to get more granularity on your earlier answers. There was a question around BDO, pricing with China slowing down. My concern is actually, or my question actually, is around the Chinese slowdown impact on your waterborne paint sales or coating sales with your HEC product that you talked about in the very glowing terms and expanding capacity and filling it up as soon as you expand it. If we continue to see sort of declining growth rates and less government emphasis on new construction and construction in general in China, is the penetration of waterborne technology into the Chinese market, both in paints and coatings, going to be enough to allow you to deliver strong top line and bottom line results, even if the market itself gets softer overall?
That's a very good question, and definitely that's something that would worry us from a perspective of the importance of the Chinese market in architectural coatings. And to be honest, we did see some of our customers taking actually shutdowns during the quarter. Not because the market is not growing, it is growing at a slower pace. Now, one of the benefits of having the global network of plants that we have, and most important, the ability to service customers all across the globe, what we are doing, again, is as growth may be slower in China, actually there are places of the world that are still incredibly well. I mean, India continues to grow. Southeast Asia continues to grow. And as we see the expansion, again, at this time, the visibility that we have, even if the growth in China would slow down, has us with all, needing all of these capacities that we're adding. I mean, even as we speak, we're still buying materials to try to deliver the demand that we're seeing from our customers, and I don't see that stopping because of, again, the strength of our both our product line, our customer context, and that there are markets that are actually still growing. And, again, it's not that China is declining. It's just growing at a lower pace.
And so, just to maybe add a little color, Luis and I visited one of our coatings customers during the quarter, and one of the things they focused on was our ability to supply more material more consistently throughout the globe. And so that was just, if you will, an illustrative case where there is an appetite for our product out there. And as the market slows, fortunately, we have that dynamic as well.
Gotcha. And then just to close the loop on the couple of ASI product lines that are struggling in the second half of the year, you talked about the energy market, and I think that's been pretty well addressed. But on packaging adhesives, you mentioned that was an area of weakness as well. Is it geographic? Is there an inventory correction going on in packaging in general? Is it just the end market itself? Sort of what's, your adhesives business has been a kind of a standout performer over the last four quarters. So where is the headwind to growth coming from in the third and what looks to be fourth quarter as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, as you know, our adhesives business is mostly a North American business, and as such, the slowdown that we saw was in North America. I see it a little bit like an inventory correction more than anything else, as again, some of the people might have some high inventories both on the labels as well as on the flexible packaging, but I don't see this to be as a consistent trend that will go over for a long period of time.
Okay, so this is basically, a few months of air pocket as people right-size their inventory given lower growth expectations going forward, and then we should get back to some level of growth after that.
Yeah, at this time, that's exactly what we're seeing. Yeah.
Thank you.
And this concludes our answer and question session at this time. I would now like to turn the call back to Jason Thompson for any further remarks.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for joining the call today. I will be around 859-815-3527. Feel free to give me a call. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes today's program. You may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.